So he says, Rav and Shmuel, again, Rav and Shmuel disagree as to what the meaning of the word miskenosis. As I said, it's unusual over here. So, you take a look at it, right? Chadamar, one of them says, She misaknos es ba'aleha. Take a look. You see the spelling is the same? Miskenos and misaknos, right? So what does misakein mean? Yeah. Know the Hebrew word sakana?
Yeah, I've said that before, sakana. I forgot what it meant.
Ah, you forgot what it means.
Sakana
means danger.
Danger. Oh,
yes, sakana is danger. So therefore, this is the verb.
Yeah.
In other words, these are the cities shemisaknos is baleihem that will endanger the people, you know, who make them. Okay. Mm-hmm. In what way? And so Rashi explains. He says, the sakana, the danger is, you started to make a building, you're liable to fall down from it or something. The building can collapse, right? Mm-hmm. Or you can take a fall or something like that. There's all this threat, and we know that in building, you know, accidents happen, right? So that's the meaning then, he says. Or in Miskenos, it reminds me, he says, of the sakana, they in danger. Okay? V'charamar, the other one says, what does it mean? Says, Shememaskenos es ba'alehem. Now, the word miskein in biblical Hebrew, we use it today in modern Hebrew too, miskein means an orman.
A what?
A poor person.
Poor person. Yeah. Somebody who is a miskein, okay? Mm-hmm. Right. So that, in other words, they go into this building frenzy, and what is going to be the result? They're going to impoverish themselves. You know, it's like these real estate speculators. They go and they build, and then the first thing you know, the market falls out, right? And then they're left holding big mortgages, and then they can't pay their debt. So miskenos is like mimaskenos, right? That they bring poverty upon those, you know, who built them. The Omamar, as we have a proverb, somebody said that kol ha'oisik b'binyon mismaske. Whoever gets himself involved in building is going eventually to suffer poverty as a result. Huh. Of course, I mean, we know that there are real estate things that got rich, but yeah. But it's a nice rush anyway.
Maybe not in their time.
Right. We certainly know that there have been plenty of incidents in history, however, you know, where people who invested, as I say, in real estate, in buildings and so on, they got stuck eventually.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. Okay. Now, what were the name of these two cities? Es Pithom, the Es Ramses, right?
Pithom and Ramses.
Pithom and Ramses, right?
Yeah.
Rav and Shmuel. Rav and Shmuel are in disagreement, but they're in agreement. You know what their agreement is? The agreement is that they're talking that Pithom and Ramses are really the same place. But why do they have two different names? Mm-hmm. Okay? So Chad Omar, one of them said, Pithom Shmo, that the original name is Taka Pithom, right? The Lama Nikra Shmo Ramses, so why do they come and give it another name, Ramses, right? Mm-hmm. So he says, because She Rishon Misroises, which means that everyone who, you know, attempts, you know, to built the storehouses, right? So what happened? The buildings collapsed. Buildings collapsed. Based upon this, there's a tradition that in reality, Pharaoh himself wanted to burden the people of Israel. So why did he build these store cities? Well, store city, according to the Gemara here, right? He built it because he built it with such chronic construction that it would fall, and then he'd make them go build it again, and then it would collapse again, and then he would again do it. And so, in other words, it was a scheme in order to get the Jews involved in building and suffering as a result of it. Okay? So this is the idea over there. V'chad Omar, the other one says, no, the name of the city was Ramses, right? Ramses Shmo, he says. Lama Nikra Shmo Pithom. So why is it also called Pithom? He says, She Rishon Pithom Bolo, that the first buildings that they put up were swallowed in the tahom, literally in the deep. In other words, the ground like opened up underneath them and boom, it collapsed in there over there. Mm-hmm. So you see, they're really talking, they have just like two different versions of the same idea. Then it's written, the Chasher Ya'anu Oso, that just as, or, right? Because Chasher could also be translated as when. Mm. When they persecuted them, right? But it's really more over here, and the idea is that just as, or, you know, they persecuted them, right? In the same measure, Ken Yirbe V'Chen Yifrots, right? The people of Israel did what? No matter how much persecution they suffered.
Stronger.
Exactly. They grew large in number, right? And they spread it forth, right? So, again, it says, Cain rubble became Portsum and Boile, right? Text should have said in the Torah, so they rubble. In other words, they became numerous, right? And came Portsum, right? They spread forth, right? Boile. This is what it should have said. Rish Lakish says, Ruach HaKodesh v'vasalton ken yibet ken yifrots. The reason for the pasuk reading the way it is because this is the Ruach HaKodesh, the Holy Spirit, that says, Pharaoh, you are trying to destroy the people of Israel by persecuting them, but you know what? The result is going to be ken yibet. They will increase v'chein yifrots, and they will burst forth too. They'll become numerous. Okay, I'll do a couple more lines. We'll call it a night over here. So at least we'll finish to the bottom of the page and do a line or two on the next page. Okay? Vayokutsu mipnei b'nei Yisrael. Then, you know, the pasuk continues and it says that vayokutsu. The question is, what exactly is the translation of Ayakutsu? So one of the translations is, you know, that they were frightened of the children of Israel. Others say that Ayakutsu named Israel means that they loathe the children of Israel, or something like that, okay? At any rate, whatever the English translation, how do Achachomim darshan it, as we would say, it's written, Malame, that shows, the pasuk teaches us, Shehoyu Domin Beinehim Kikotsim, that to the Egyptians they were like thorns in their eyes. In other words, that they couldn't suffer the sight of the Jewish people. Then it's written, Vayavidu Mitzrayim es Bnei Yisrael Beforech, which means literally that the Egyptians enslaved the children of Israel Beforech. Forach we translate with rigor, correct. Mm-hmm. All right. But, again, a difference of opinion as to what does the word Beforech refer to. All right. So Rabbi Elazar Omar, Rabbi Elazar's interpretation is that the word Beforech means Beferach, literally with a nice, gentle mouth. Meaning what?
First he talked to them
nice and softly. Oh, do you want to help me? I would so appreciate you coming to work with me and showing me, you know, etc., etc. And once he got him involved, he was a different guy, okay? Rabbi Shmuel ben Nachmani Omar, he said, the word means bifricha, which means literally back-breaking. Okay. In other words, take it literally, right? That they enslaved them with back-breaking labor. Okay, I think I'll stop at this particular point. Right?
Oh,
no, go a little bit more. All right, I'll do a couple more lines.
Thank you.
And that's it. Okay. All right. It's written by Yemoru es Chayehem, and they embittered their lives, right? Ba'avoda kosha, with harsh labor, right? B'chomer u'milvenim. The chomer, in this case, means with the mortar and with bricks. Okay? So Omar Rava said, actually at first, betchilo, the idea is first bechomer v'ulveinim. In other words, the first thing that he asked them to do was what? To make bricks and to use the mortar and so on and so forth. Once he got them involved in that project, so, right, then in that case, what happens? So, finally it happened that the chol aveda basoda, it's called Abadisama Shehavodu, right? It's called Abadisama. That Well, actually, I should stop after this call. I did about Sodom. Okay. The end was that once he got him involved in this, then they made the Jews do all the work in the field as well.
Yeah,
in other
straw
words.
Themselves.
Right. Mm. And not just the straw, but the implication would be that they also had to do other work as well for the Egyptians. Okay? Mm-hmm. All right. I think I'm going to stop at this particular point.
Here we are on.
Yeah.
Ahmed Bayes.
Right. And then next week we can start from Ahmed Bayes, and we'll start, first of all, the role of the Jewish women. Okay. Yes, we're on Yud Aleph Amud Beis right now, Masechta Sota, and tonight is the 25th of the month of June, I believe.
1997.
Right. Okay. What we learned since last week, the first few lines have been over, we learned that in order to break the spirit of the people of Israel, Pharaoh came up with another scheme, and that was to force women to do men's work and to force men to do women's work. And this being, you know, an effort to degrade them and at the same time make them work harder than they normally would. Obviously, a woman has to work hard too. But for a man to do it, I mean, I don't have to tell you, the average man, if he's asked to become a house mom, right?
I was just going to say, in the current society, that seems to be
prevalent.
Still, the way,
I don't know how prevalent it is. There are people like that.
Yeah,
yeah.
The women do the beast of dirt, the labor. The man doesn't, to this day.
Yeah.
That's in the course outline, you know, the rural Chinese.
Right. I'm sure that in the cities you don't find it that
no,
way.
No.
But it's true that there are some men today who are staying home with the children and being housewives, whereas the women go out to work. Sometimes it may be that the men can't find work and the woman does have a job or something. Illness may also sometimes play a part. But still, the average man would prefer to do what is called man's work.
I would think so.
Yes, and I'm sure that many women, contrary, you know, to what is preached these days, you know, the fashion of feminism, but many women still prefer to have their traditional roles and not to go out and to become carpenters and auto mechanics and things like that. So, all right. So then we now come to the new statement, and this is the statement of Dorosh Rav Avdira. Rav Avdira gave the following drush, following interpretation. He said, "Bischar noshim tzikonios shohoyu b'yosah hador nigalu yisrael mitzrayim." Says it was as a result, literally as a reward for the virtuous women. They were the ones who were, in other words, were the real reason why the people of Israel were redeemed from Egypt. In other words, they had such wonderful women in that particular generation that the people of Israel were redeemed from Egypt. And now the Gemara continues to tell what was the particular zechut, particular
merit,
you know, that they had. It says, "B'shalash sheholchos l'shov mayim," when the women would go out in order to draw water, "Hakadosh Baruch Hu mezamin lehem dogim ketanim b'kadehen v'shoavos mechze mayim mechze dogim." Okay, we have to realize that there are times in the year when the Nile River, and presumably also some of the other waters of Egypt, they teem with a lot of small fish, okay? And they're there, you know, in such quantity that it is possible to go out not just with nets, but even with a jug, a jar, or something like that, dip it into the water, and lo and behold, you not only have water, but you also have little fish inside. So this is what the Gemara is telling us, that they would go out in order to draw water, and the Rabbeinu Shalalem would provide them with small fish in their jugs. The shoavos, and then they would draw mechzemayim, half water, or mechzedogim, and half fish. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
And then what happened? Uvos, then they came back home, the shofsos shtei kedevos, and they would set two pots on the fire, okay? Achas shel chamin, one of them was hot water that they were heating. The achas shel dogim, and one for the fish, okay? And then the molichos esel ba'alehen lasodeh. Then they would bring these pots of water and fish to their husbands in the field. Umarchitzos oson, and they would bathe them. Rashi explains that they would wash the hands and the face and the feet, you know, if the husbands were working hard, and so they used the warm water in order to wash them. Visochos oson, and also they would anoint them. In other words, that they would use oil on them in order to, you know, like a balm, right? Umarchilos oson, right? And then they would feed them, naturally, what? The fish, right? The mashkos oson, and they would give them to drink. And then what happened? Viniskokos lahen. And then they would have relations with them. In other words, they would have marital relations with their husbands. Bench for time between the portions in the field that were like roped off or something. Meitzar in the Hebrew means about, you know, I'm quoting what Rashi has to say over here, that you know, the fields were divided, you know, they were set apart like you know, fences or hedges or something or other like that. And so in the privacy of the area, this is where they would have relations with their husbands, okay? And this is what he means when he speaks about them as the sheepfolds. Of course, why is he using the expression shvatai, meaning the sheepfolds? Because we have a pasuk. Shenemar. Pasuk says in Tehillim, says over there, im tishkevun ben shvatayim, if you lie down between the sheepfolds. So he says, bischar, he interprets it as a reward for tishkevun ben shvatayim, because you did lay down together, you know, between the sheepfolds. So zochel Yisrael levizatz Mitzrayim. For that reason, the people of Israel merited the fact that when they left Egypt, they were able to go out with great wealth from the Egyptians. If you remember, okay. Shenemar, as the pasuk says, again quoting the same psalm in Tehillim, it says, "Kanfe Yona nechpo bekesef, v'yavrosechem yirak rak chorutz," which means the wings of the dove are covered in silver, and her pinions in fine gold. Okay. So you'll ask me, so what is the connection between this? But the answer is that in Shir Hashirim, we have the people of Israel referred to as Yonosi Samosi. In other words, my dove, my perfect one. So that the people of Israel are, as I said, compared to the dove, and therefore taking this posik. In Tehillim, the wings of the dove, right, are covered in silver, and its pinions, right, in fine gold. So this refers then to the Bizas Mitzrayim, in other words, the spoil that they received as they were leaving Egypt, that they got the silver and the gold and so on from the Egyptians, okay? Because of the fact, you know, that they had suffered so. But nevertheless, who ultimately was it in whose merit the redemption came? The answer is the women, because they did everything in order to encourage their husbands not to lose their spirit and to remain loyal to Yiddishkeit.
And the yes. Sheepfolds, the question of sheepfolds, is that merit because of the modesty that was involved?
As I said, right. Rashi explains, right, yeah, that you have a border here, a border here, and in between is like a ditch and so on.
Yeah.
So they got their privacy that way, right. Yeah, correct.
Maybe some are 36 to be in the world of women.
Why not? Doesn't say the men have a monopoly on being tzaddik. You can point out loads of women who are tzaddikonios, you see, even as it says over here. Righteous women, right?
What happened? This is long before they were forbidden to lie together. They remember one of the things that the Pharaoh did was to separate. That was later on.
Okay.
When they were forbidden to procreate.
Actually, we don't. Well.
Is this a different time?
This is all part of the process of Egyptian slavery. Okay.
Yes.
All right. But obviously, there was a time when the people of Israel you know, men and women lived a family life, because otherwise how could they produce so many children?
Right.
Okay? Okay, it's written after all, Paru Vayishvatsu, right, that they were fruitful, yes, and you know, that they spread forth and so on and so forth. But you're right in that, for example, in the Seder, you know, when we read the Haggadah, it's written over there that one of the things, you know, one of the Mayabasiv Loisam, in other words, you know, that God saw the difficult lives that the people of Israel were living, and it says over there, Zu Prishas Derech Eretz. In other words, this is the fact that husbands and wives were separated from each other, were unable to live a family life together. And the pasuk that they did is Vayar Elohim Espadei Yisrael, that God saw the children of him, Vayeda Elohim, and God knew. God knew what? So the answer is he knew that their life had been made more difficult by virtue of not being able to live together as husband and wife. Of course, we're not finished with the story yet. Okay? So let's see what the sequel is. Okay, so far we see that they take care of the husbands, right? They bathe them, they encourage them, they give them food and drink and so on, and then they engage in family life together, right? All right, now.
Prime example was Moshe's father and mother, right?
Yes, okay. Then it says, V'keban shebisabros, and when they became pregnant, boz levoteihem, they would go to their home, V'keban shemagiyas man boldeihem, and when the time came for them to give birth, then holchos v'yoldos basadeh, you know where they would give birth? Not at home, but in the field, right? They would go and they would give birth in the field. And where? Tachas ha-tapuach, underneath the apple tree, right? Shene'emar, as the Pasuk says, this is in Shir HaShirim, where it says, Tachas ha-tapuach uraticho. The whole Pasuk isn't quoted over here. It says, I have aroused you underneath the apple tree. Shoma chiblaso imecho, shoma chiblo yudaso. This is the place where your mother travailed in order to give birth unto you. So, as you can see, they tie in psukim from Shir HaShirim, from Tilim, and from other places in order to enrich the story, you know, that we have in the Chumash Mos about the people of Israel in Egypt, because after all, the details are, you know, on the sketchy side, so to speak, of the Torah, and so therefore our sages come and they flesh out more these things. This is what we mean by Dorash so-and-so. In other words, this rabbi gave the following sermon or interpretation, something
Dorash,
like that.
Dorash.
Yeah, Dorash is the verb and Drash is the noun. Okay. All right. Now, all right, so the women now give birth. V'HaKadosh Baruch Hu sholeach mishmei morom mi shemenakir mishaper oson kechayu zu shemishaperes es havlot. Okay. So, these women were in the field, right? But you know what? They did not have any midwife. Dangerous for a midwife to come and help Jewish people. So what happened? So HaKadosh Baruch Hu Sholeach, he sent what? Mishmei Morom, me. He sent somebody who? Now naturally, who is Rabbeinu Shlom sent? Sends an angel. Okay, right. So he sent an angel down in order to menakir, in order to cleanse Mishaper and to strengthen out, or to straighten out, or to make beautiful. The word shaper means to improve, literally. Mm-hmm. But also it has the idea of beauty involved in it, okay? Osan, right? Who is the them? The answer is the babies that were born. So that the Rabbeinu Shalom sent an angel who would serve as like a midwife to them, and, you know, wash the baby, and if the baby's limbs were sort of crooked, to try to straighten them out and so on, so that you know the baby would be
perfect.
As perfect as possible. Kechaya zu, even like, now of course you'll tell me, what does the word chaya mean? We know that the word chaya means an animal.
Mm-hmm.
But there's another meaning for the word chaya also. In the language of Gemara, chaya also means a midwife.
Oh. What has to do with the word chai to begin with? Life.
Right, right, of course, absolutely. Kachayazu, even like the midwife, Shemeshaperes is Adlan, who, as I said, makes beautiful the child, okay? Shenemar, as we have a pasuk this time, the pasuk comes from Sefer Yechezkel, the book of Ezekiel, where it's written, Umodo Sayich, and as far as your birth is concerned, the Yom who led us Osoch, the day when you were born, Lo Korash Shoreich, your umbilical cord had not been cut, Uvamayim Lo Rachatz Lemishi, nor had you been washed very well, as softly, literally, Mishi and so on, like silk almost, right? In other words, who did it? There was no midwife over there to do it, but instead it was the angel who took care of it. Okay. And Umalaki Blahen, Shnei Egulin, and he would gather for them two, literally like round somethings. All right. So let's say like round rocks. Okay. Echot Shel Sheb, and the reason why I say rock, you'll become obvious in another moment when we see the next line. Echot Shel Shemen, one had oil in it, the Echot Shel Dash, and the other one had honey. Shenemar, as it is written, in this case it happens to be in the book of Devarim, the book of Deuteronomy, says, Vayeni Kehu Devash Besela, Veshemen Mechal Mishtzur. I'm quoting again the rest of the pasuk, which isn't over here. Meaning that God gave them honey, literally to suck from a rock, right, and oil from flint rock. So in other words, who gave them the honey and the oil which would help nourish them? The answer is God, right, by giving them these stones which contained it. The kaven shemakirin bohem mitzrayim or mitzrim boyin lahorga, and as soon as the Egyptians became aware that Jewish children had been born, then they came in order to kill them. So what happened? A miracle was performed for them. And the children were like swallowed up in the ground. And they would bring oxen and they would plow on top of where the children, you know, had been concealed in the ground. In order, of course, to do what? In order to fool the Egyptians, exactly, okay? Again, how do we know? Because it's an interpretation of another pasuk. What is a pasuk? Sheneba, as the pasuk says, the pasuk in Taleb, which says, Al gabi chorshu chorshim, on my back did the plowmen plow. There, in that particular psalm, it speaks about the fact, you know, that the people of Israel have suffered again and again from enemies. And this is one of the psukim, in other words, that the enemy tried to plow them under, right? Al gabi choshur choshim, and so on. So, therefore, they take this pasuk and, you know, they apply it to this miracle whereby the children were concealed in the ground, right? And then the acha sheholchin, and after the Egyptians would go away, and then they would shoot up, even like the grass of the field.
They had multiple births too.
Yes. Shenemar, as the pasuk says, again, it's the pasuk in Yechezkel, it's written over there, Revovo Getzema Chatzoda Nisatich. In other words, I made you into myriads, you know. Revolver means like tens of thousands, all right? And even as the grass of the field or the vegetation of the field. The cave on Shemiskatlin, and then when they grew older, Boyan Adorm Adorm Levodem, they would come in flocks and flocks back to their home. As you mentioned before, you know that there are many, many children born to each family. According to a tradition that we have in the Medrash, for example, we say that each woman, when she conceived, she bore sextuplets. So, the idea, of course, being, you know, that how could the people of Israel grow so tremendously in spite of the oppression of the Egyptians. But the answer is that Jews were blessed with multiple births, and that's
sixfold.
The way right.
They were blessed sixfold.
Sixfold.
With every pregnancy.
Right. Some say 60-fold, but I'll settle for six. Okay. So they would come back again in flocks and flocks to their homes. Shenemar, as the Pasuk says, by the way, it's a continuation of the Pasuk that we just cited before. Revavok Tzemach Hatzad and Satich, right? Batirbi, it's written over there, and you grew many. Batigdali, and you grew great. Batavoi, Badi Adoyim. And you became like decked with ornaments. So he says, Al Tikre, don't read this as Badi Adoyim, Elo Be'edri Adorim. In other words, you came in flocks and flocks. Al Tikre is something that we find many, many times in a drasha. When I speak about a drasha over here, or a drash, let's call it a drash, okay? Because I don't want to confuse it with the rabbi's sermon every week, which we also call a drasha, okay? But this is an interpretation, the drash, okay? And we find that when there is like a play on words, similarity or something like that, they want to bring out an idea, so they'll often say Al Tikre, don't read it the way it says literally, but read it figuratively. Right. You know, we say it every Shabbos after Enkel Akeinu. Of course, actually it should be said every day, but never mind, every Shabbos. Okay, we would say Yom Rabbi Elozo V'Chanina, right, Talmidei Chachamim Abim Sholom Bo'elam, right, that the Talmidei Chachamim, in other words the sages, increase peace in the world, Shenemar, Bechol Bonayach L'mudei Hashem, Rav Shlom Bonayach, right? It's written that all your children will be taught in the ways of God, and great will be the peace of your children. So he says, Al Tikrei Bonayach, Elo Bonayach. Don't read it as your children, but read it as your buildings, right? Why? The idea is not that doesn't mean that the pasuk should be amended, so to speak. No, I'm not talking about that. What we're saying is that the idea of Bonayach also suggests the fact that children are the builders
of the future,
exactly. So this is a lovely case of Al Tikre. So he says over here too, don't read Badi Adoyim, namely with ornaments, but rather read it as Ba'edre Adorim. In other words, they would come back, and know after the people of Israel, the children, grew up and they increased in numbers, so they came back home, how? As we said, flocks upon flocks. They came back in bunches home. Ushanigla HaKadosh Baruch Hu LaHayom. And then when God revealed himself to the people of Israel at the Red Sea, Eim Hikiruhu Techila, the children were the very first to recognize God. Shenemar, as the Pasuk says, Ze Eli Vyandehu, right, this is my God, and I shall, there are many meanings to it, but one of them is I shall beautify him, right, in other words, as our sages tell us, make a beautiful lulav, make a beautiful esrig, and so on and so forth, in order to beautify God, right? Okay. So, but then what is the next one? Elohei Ovi, he's the God of my father, right? Barov Menu, and I will extol him. So, these children who had been sent, who had been taken care of by the angels sent by God, so they were the first to recognize the presence of God when God revealed himself at the miracle of the crossing of the Red Sea.
Like the movie Touched by an Angel.
Don't watch it too often. Okay. Now, we continue with the story of Pharaoh. Vayomer Melech Mitzrayim Lam Yaldos Uviyos. Remember, the king of Egypt said to the Jewish midwives, to the Hebrew midwives, right? What did he say to them? He said to them, Kol Habein HaYelod, any son that will be born, Hayaora Tashlichuhu, right? Then you have to throw them into the river, into the Nile, right? The Kol Habas Techayun, and if it's a girl, then you can let her live. Okay. So, they're commenting first upon the first part, where it says that the king of Egypt said to the Hebrew midwives, Rav Shmuel. So there's a difference of opinion between Rav and Shmuel, two great contemporary teachers, as to who were the people, who were the midwives. They'd want to identify them, the definite people. Okay? So, Chad Omar Isho Evita. One of them said that the two were a woman and her daughter. Chad Omar, and the other one said, Kalo v'chamosa. Kalo v'hir means daughter-in-law, and chamosa means mother-in-law. The daughter-in-law and the mother-in-law. See, the word kalo in Hebrew has two different meanings. Mm-hmm. We know it in the sense of a bride. Right. I mean, that's the common use. But nevertheless, the word kalo also means a daughter-in-law. Just as frankly, the word chasan, yeah, I mean, we think of it always as the groom, right? Chasan kalo and so on, right. But the word chasan in Hebrew also means son-in-law.
How do you differentiate the meaning then?
Context.
If it's the same word.
Context. Yeah. Of course.
Well, they should be. It's like accepting them and the family. It's
yeah,
I think it's
right.
Proper.
Right.
Yeah.
So,
what do you call them? Accepted.
You have to accept
them. Okay, go on.
There are names for that.
Different words.
Different
we'll
words.
We'll get to that. Okay.
You know, when you speak Ashkenazi the way I'm doing, you know, and I'm learning Gemara, I'm learning Ashkenazi. Actually, in Hebrew, I mean, if you use it the Sephardi pronunciation, then it would be, you know, not Chasan Kala, but it would be Chatan and Kala. Okay, Chatan and Kala. But it doesn't change the meaning or something.
Right.
But I'm reminded of a joke. You have to know Yiddish in order to appreciate this. Okay. It's written in the Torah about Sarah. Hagar complained, you know, Sarah can't stand Hagar anymore, right? She is putting on airs and everything else, not behaving the way a maidservant should behave to her mistress, right? So who does she let it out on, actually? She lets it out upon Abraham, if you remember. And over there it's written, Chamasi Alecha, which means, I have my complaint against you, Chamasi. Now, the Yiddish, the joke is Chamosi Alecha. The man once said, he quoted the pasuk and said, Chamosi Alecha, that's my mother-in-law. I'm suffering for my mother-in-law because of you. Why? Why do you take it? I mean, because we know it. Well, how do I pronounce the word for mother-in-law over here? Chamos.
Yeah.
So you see, in Ashkenazi, that makes sense. Yeah. It's like, remember my late professor, Louis Ginsberg, many rest in peace. Mm-hmm. Great scholar. Yeah, he also told the joke once. Yeah. So at any rate, you know.
Take a break.
Oh.
You can say anything you want now.
You mean that the tape came to an end?
No.
It clicked off.
Yes,
it clicked off?
I thought it clicked.
Yeah, I don't know.
I'm sorry.
I know, it's still flashing lights at me over here, so I guess it's still moving. All right, anyway, to quote him, you know, in Yiddish it makes sense, or in Ashkenazi if you wish. Person felt that chicken is not meat. You know, it's a question about what is the role of, you know, what is chicken? I'm not sure we possibly know that chicken is like meat, and therefore you have to observe hours of waiting, and you have to treat it with inflation and so on, okay? So it says, what is the pasuk? Where does the pasuk say so? So the answer is, when Abraham had the Brisbane Absorim, in other words, the covenant that he made, by cutting, you know, an animal, and remember, into pieces and so on. So it's written over there, V'yeshat Sipar Lebasa. Sipar lebasa, which means he did not cut up the fowl. Literally, that's what it means. But you know, it sounds like a sipar lebasa means what? The fowl, the bird, is not meat.
Meat.
So in other words, it shouldn't be considered fleshic. So, of course, I say it's only a joke. It's not a din. The din, of course, is not
a
mismatch.
It's fowl meat, F-O-W-L.
Yes.
Right?
Right. Not F-O-U-L. Okay.
All
right.
However you call it.
Right.
They're calling it meat. However you call it.
At any rate, all right, getting back to our text over here, the question is, okay, so one of them says it's a mother and a daughter, and the other one says that it is a mother-in-law and a daughter-in-law, right? Guns fine. But the question is, so who are they referring to? So, Mam Domar Isho Vito, the authority who says that it is a mother and a daughter, then who are these two? The answer is Yocheved or Miriam. Okay? They were the two midwives. Okay? Mam Domar Kalvachamaisa. And the one who says that it was the daughter-in-law and the mother-in-law, then who was it? It was Yocheved and Elisheva. As it is, obviously Yocheved, in other words, the mother of Moses, was one of the characters in both. But the question is, was it Miriam, or was it Elisheva? Who was Elisheva?
Yeah, that was Aaron's
wife. That's correct, Aaron's wife. So in other words, she would be a daughter-in-law to Yocheved. Okay? So, Gemara continues and says, Tanya Kamando Omar Isho Vito, right? We could interpret, even in accordance with the person who says that it was the woman and her daughter, right? The Tanya, in that we have learned a tradition which says, Shifra Zu Yocheved. They say that Shifra is Yocheved. You know, it's written over there that what were the names of the two. So the answer in the Bible is that one of them is called Shifra and the other one is Pua. Right? Shifra and Pua. Alright. So, if we say that, you know, that Shifra really is Yocheved, okay. So, Velom Nikro Shmo Shifra, and that's the case. So why does the Bible refer to her as Shifra and not as Yocheved? So the answer is because Shifra means Shemesha Peres Es Havlad. We had that word before. Meaning, remember that she beautifies the child, right? Dover Acher, another interpretation. What does the name Shifra refer to? It says Shifra. It says you take a look. Sheporu v'rovu Yisrael b'yomecha. The people of Israel were fruitful and they multiplied in the days of Shifra. Naturally, how do you derive it? You see, Shifra looks like Shepora, right? Or in other words, that, you know, the people of Israel were fruitful, okay? And naturally, due to the fact that she saved the children, so therefore, the people of Israel, you know, multiplied in her days. How about the other person, Pua? So, if we say that, you know, it's a mother and a daughter, then Pua is Miriam, right? And we have to say that Pua is Miriam. So in that case, why does the Torah call her Pua? Right? So the answer is Shehoyeso Pua Motias Hablad. One reason being that she would Pua they take in the sense that she would utter something, say something, right? Or give a cry according to Rashi. And as a result of her crying, in other words, she would cause the child to come forth. In other words, she was sort of like, you know, these coaches that you you have these days, you know, to talk them in. Oh. Come on, let's go. One more push, and so on and so forth, you know. We've seen enough in the movies, even if we haven't been in the birthing room, right? So, in other words, she would talk and encourage them to produce the child. Dover Acher, another interpretation. Pua, why? Shehoyesa Pua Baruch HaKodesh, because she talked with the Spirit, the Holy Spirit in her. In other words, she was endowed with the Spirit of prophecy. Okay? The Omeris, and this is what she said, Asido imi shetele bein shemoshias Yisrael. My mother is destined to give birth to a son who will be the Savior of Israel, will save the people of Israel. So she was already uttering prophecy even earlier before the birth of Moses. Vayomer. Pharaoh said, V'yaled chen esur v'yos, when you help the Hebrew women give birth, then the next two words in the pasuk, not quoted over here, are ur isem alho avnoyim. You should take a look at the avnoyim. Now the question is, what does the word avnoyim mean? So we take it in a sense, right, like a birth stool. Okay. Of course, the word is used in that sense too.
Even like a stone.
Yeah, like a stone, exactly. Yeah. Okay, right. Hmm. Okay. So we shall discuss that right now, okay? So he says, by avnoyim, right?
What's a birth stool?
Right.
Oh.
A birthing stool. So to speak. Right. Only it wasn't a chair, but it was instead a rock upon which they sat. Okay. So Amar Abchonon, but Abchonon says, Simon Godol Masalehem says, he gave them, meaning Pharaoh, gave them a good sign. What do you mean a good sign? To let the women know, said, you know, I can tell you right now from my own experience how you'll know whether the child that's going to be born is going to be a son or it's going to be a daughter. What is the simon? Omalahen, he said to the women, he says, Bishar Shekoras Leleid, that when the woman literally
So he says,
when the woman crouches in order to give birth, then her thighs become as cold as stone. In other words, from the exertion or something like that, they become cold. All right. So, in other words, he's telling them that You can figure out exactly when it is that the actual moment of birth is going to take place, when the woman crouches and her thighs become like this. The Easter Omar, and there are those who say that he gave him a different sign. Kedirsiv, as the pasuk says, it's written in Yirmiyahu, Vayered Beis HaYotzer, I went down to the potter's home, potter's house, right? The Inei Hu Oseh Melocha Avdoyim, and behold, he was doing labor on the avnoyim. Now, of course, what is the avnoyim? This is the stone upon which he would fashion, you know, the jug, the whatever he was making over there. Yeah. Okay. Mayo tezeh, just as if you have the case of the person, you know, the potter, right? Mm-hmm. Literally, the craftsman. Okay.
Fashion.
Yeah. Yerach Mekan, the Yerach Mekan, you know, he sits and his stool is there and he sits on it working away and his thigh is on this side and the other thigh is on the other side, right? The Sadan Be'emsa, and in the middle is the Sadan. The Sadan is the
battery.
Huh?
The one that goes
right. But a little bit, it's like a foundry or something.
The revolving.
Yeah. And anyway, I mean, we know what it is in the case of the potter, okay? Yeah. They use the word sedan today in Hebrew, like, for example, the blacksmith
was
on the anvil or something. This is also sedan. And from this, today, about Hebrew, you know, they speak about sadan, so namely, like a workshop. Right, okay, yeah. So, at any rate, okay, the sadan, the anvil, or whatever you want to call it, you know, the place where he's working is in the middle. So he says, "Af isha." Likewise, the woman, yorech mekan, that the one thigh is on one side of the birth stool, and the other thigh on the other side. Avlad ba'emsa, and the child is in the middle. Okay. Im bein hu, he says to them, if it is a son, v'hamiten osa, right? Then you are to kill him. So Amar Rabbi Chanina. And he said, Simon Godol Masalehen. He gave them a simon. You can tell immediately, he says, whether it's going to be a boy or a girl. How? He says, Ben Panuv Lamata. If it comes out, if the child comes out with his face up, then he says, this is a boy. Should be a girl. All right. Bainey says, bottom, Lamata, of course, is the face is facing down. But Bas, if it's the daughter, Ponehu Lamala. Her face is, she's facing up. Okay.
this is not a medical fact.
No, not necessarily. Of course not. Of course not.
Yeah.
But obviously, you know, he's telling them, look, you can't fool me. You try to, you know, you can't fool me. I know all I have to do is to watch and all I have to see.
Yeah.
If I see the child is going to be facing up, then I know it's a girl.
Yeah,
if I see the child facing down, then I know it's going to be a boy. You can't get away with any monkey business. Okay, this is what Pharaoh is saying. Okay. But Hirena Ham Yaldo says, him, V'lo Yosu Kasher Diber Aleihem. And it says, the midwives feared God, right? And they did not do as the king of Egypt had said unto them. Now, the word is Aleihem, unto them. So Gemara says lohen miboyle. It should have used the word, the ordinary word, which be diber lohen. He said to them, why alehen? Well, that's already a good question, because really you could use either one. But obviously he had a drash in mind. So Amar Rabbi Yosi Bar Chanina, his drash was milamed, says the wording being unusual by using the word alehen shows us that what shetvon ledavar avera. He wanted them to do monkey business with them. In other words, he wanted to have sex with them. Okay, but they refused to it. They defied him and they refused to do it. Okay, v'atachayenes hayelodim, which means and they kept alive the children. Right, Tana, we have a tradition which says lo dayon shelo heimisu osan. Not only did they not kill the children, right? But on the contrary, they also provided them with water and with food and so on. So the midwife said unto Pharaoh, Kilo kanoshim, because the rest of the sentences are ivios. The Jewish women, the Hebrew women, are not like the Egyptian women, right? And then it says, ki choyos heino. The question is, what does it mean, the word choyos? Okay? Ki choyos heino. And that's what the Gemara asks. This is my choyos, what is the meaning of choyos? It says, ilaymo, if we are to say choyos mamash, in other words, they were, how do I translate the word chayo before?
Animal?
No, but no, I also gave you another interpretation.
No.
Midwife. Right. Yeah. All right. So the first interpretation over here is ki chayos heino, meaning that, you know, they said these women are like midwives. So Gemara says, atu chayo milot zmicho chayo achvite lulodo. You mean to tell me that one midwife doesn't need another midwife if she herself gives birth? So that cannot be the interpretation according to this interpretation, right? Elo, but rather Omrulo, they said unto him, Umozu kechaya nimshala. This nation is compared to an animal. After all, when an animal gives birth, it doesn't need a midwife, okay? So they are compared to animals. We're, you know, the people of Israel compared to animals. So he tells you, Yehuda, right? Gurariyeh. If you remember in the blessing that Jacob gives his children, you know, prior to his death, right? So he says, Yehuda is a Gurariyeh. He's like a lion's whelp, okay? Don, he says to him, Yehidon Nochosh. Dan will be like a serpent, a snake, right? Naphtali, he says he's Ayola Shelucha, means like a hind who is let loose. In other words, he's a swift animal, right? Like a swift deer or something, right? Yisachar, he calls him a Chamor Gorm, in other words, a bony donkey, right? And then because, you know, he can take great burdens on his back, okay? Also, he works hard, okay? Yeah. Yosef, he's referred to as Bechor Shor, as the firstborn who's like an ox, right? In other words, strong like an ox. Binyamin, he's called Ze'ev Yitroch, right? He's called like a ravenous wolf, right? So we see that all these names so far have a comparison to an animal, right? So the Gemara says, Dichsivbe, where the Torah mentions the name of an animal in connection with one of the sons of Jacob, so it's written, Udalokasivbe. But what about where we don't have this? I mean, you don't find that, for example, Shimon or Levi, for example, compared to animals, right? So he says, even if it's not written, the Lokasibe, Kasir. Nevertheless, there is a reference. Why? Because we find a pasuk again in Yechezkel. Now, what does it say over there? It says, Ma imcho lovi, or lovi actually, should be ben aroyos rovtza. Your mother, he says, is like a lioness, and she crouches out among the lions. So he's referring to all the people of Israel. So in other words, even if the name was not mentioned in Genesis, the name of an animal, you know, connected, excuse me, with one of the tribes, but nevertheless, even the people of Israel are compared to being lions, the offspring of lionesses. Okay, right. So in other words, then the interpretation that says ki chayos heino means that they are like animals, that interpretation means that they don't require the services of a midwife. They give birth to their children without having to call us. So what can we do, right? Vayehi, so it came to pass ki yoraham yaldo says holy him, right? That because the midwives feared the Lord, right? Vayas lahem bought him. So he made unto them houses. So Rav Shmuel, again, machlokas between Rav and Shmuel as to what is the meaning of batim over here. Chad omar batik unu leviyo, chad omar batim malchus. One of them says, what are the batim? What are the houses? So, according to the first authority, right, it means that they had households of kahanim and leviim that would be descended from them. Chad omar, and the other one said, it's batim malchus. Royalty, houses of royalty would be the center for them. And now he explains that. Man de Omar, the one who says, Bote kuhunu leviyo, right? The houses of Kahanim and Leviim, in other words, they would have descendants who would be Kahanim and Leviim. So, who are they? It's Aaron and Moshe. Okay? After all, Aaron was. No. Aaron was a Kohen, right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. And Moshe was a Levi. But so were other descendants of Amram also, right? Mm-hmm. Of Yocheved, who became Levim. Okay. Oman, Omar, Bote Malchus, and the one who says that the houses to descend from them are the houses of royalty. So he says, David, Nami, Miriam, Kosi. David also was a descendant of Miriam. This is what he says. Okay? So how do we know that? So now he's going to bring in a quotation from the book of primarily of Chronicles in order to prove the fact that King David was eventually descended from Miriam. Of course, we know that according to the book of Ruth, who is King David descended from? Ruth. But after all, there are generations back too.
Yeah.
And so generations back, Miriam was an ancestor. Now, how do we know that? So, the Gemara now says, that's it. The Pasuk says, Batomas Azuva, and Azuva, Ashes Kalev, the wife of Caleb, died. Vayikachlo Kolev es Ephros. So then Caleb took Ephros, right? Vatelidlo es Kor. And she gave birth unto him, unto Hur, right? Uksiv, and it's also written, Vidovid ben Ish Ephrosi, that David was an Ephrosi. Okay, so an Ephrosi meaning what? So he ties it together with the name Ephros, in order to show what? That Kalev, in other words, Caleb, right, married Miriam. In other words, he identifies Miriam with the name Ephros, okay?
Yeah.
And therefore, David being an Ephrosi means that he was a descendant from her. It's a little far-fetched, I'll be honest with you, but nevertheless, this is the drash that we have over here, that he wants to show that it's Bote Malchus, that from Miriam, right, one of Miriam's descendants eventually became king of Israel. Yes?
Two things come to my mind. Number one, when you the Yiddish play, the famous Miriam Ephros,
yes,
that obviously is someone
that's
who was familiar,
right,
familiar with learning to have picked up on this.
Yeah,
to
Miriam
use
Ephros,
that name.
Right. Yeah, because
right?
Miriam is like a form of Miriam.
Miriam,
right.
Right,
right.
Ephros.
Right. Yeah.
The other thing comes to my mind, if Ruth was a convert,
yes,
how could she have stemmed?
No, no, no. Ruth did not stem from Miriam. We're not
Boaz.
Saying that.
Well,
Boaz.
How would David? Would it have come
okay.
through? Would it have come through Boaz then?
Boaz.
Would have come
right.
through
Boaz. Right. Of course.
Okay.
Boaz.
Okay.
Right.
All right.
Right.
I
mean, you
clear.
Read the pedigree over
yeah.
there, you
yeah.
know,
yeah.
At
right.
the end, the last psukim
yeah.
in Megillas Ruth. So you see.
Boaz works. Then.
Right. Right.
Okay.
In other words, you know, Yehuda gave birth to Perez, and Perez gave birth to Hetzron, and so on and so forth.
Yeah.
Okay. So that, you know, they trace them.
Yeah,
okay.
The stuff that we always
right.
skip when we're reading fast. You know?
I don't read fast.
I
read slow.
No, yeah, I know you. You know it by heart.
Well, I read from the text. I don't read from by heart. Okay. I think we'll stop at the bottom over here. And we have three more lines, and we shall continue with this exposition over here.
Very good. Thank you very much.
Bottom of Yod Aleph on the face, right? Okay.
We found it be three.
Couple of words of introduction. Are we ready?
Yeah.
You have the right date.
Yeah.
Okay. Last week, if you remember, we had occasion to see that names in the Bible are often a source for interpretation. And at times, we also had occasion to see that the names are used and then assigned to somebody else. I'll give you an example of what we had last week. If you remember, according to one opinion, who was it who took care of Moshe during the time that he was in the bulrushes? Remember?
Miriam.
Or, and who was the midwife, and so on and so forth. So as we said, at that particular time, according to one opinion, it was Isha Bita, in other words, a woman and her daughter. And who were they? So the answer is, it was Yocheved and Miriam. That's one opinion. Of course, the other opinion was that it was Isha v'Chamoso, in other words, a woman and her daughter-in-law. And so in that case, it was Yocheved and the wife of Eliezer. Right, Elisheva. Right, okay. But getting back again to, you know, the mother and the daughter business. In other words, Yocheved and Miriam. You remember that the Bible doesn't, first of all, mention who the midwives were. And yes, it does mention. Excuse me. It mentions who they were, but it doesn't say that it was Yocheved and Miriam. Instead, who does the what does the Torah tell us? It was right, Shifra and Pua. All right. So therefore, when we learned the text last week, we saw that they take the names Shifra and Pua, and they interpreted that. Shifra, why does the Torah refer to her as Shifra? Because Mishaperes is applied. In other words, she, you know, after the baby is born, she makes it beautiful. In other words, she washes it, she takes care of it, and so on. And how about Pua? So we learned that they take the word Pua in the sense that she speaks encouragingly to the mother, you know, sort of like a Lamaze business, you know, or something like that, so that she helps. You know, the mother give birth by encouraging her, you know, and so on. So we see then that Shifra and Pua are given a, you know, a function, shall we say, you know, that you know that even though, you know, the Torah doesn't say that Yocheved and Miriam were the midwives, but nevertheless we see that you know that our sages are trying to identify. You know, the special role that they had, that is, you know, that Yocheved and Miriam had, by identifying them at the same time with Shifra and Pua, And for what reason? Obviously, in order to say that these two women were among, as we read last week, the Noshim Tzidkonios, the righteous women, in whose merit we were redeemed from the slavery of Egypt. Okay? Remember what we learned higher up on the page over there, that there was in this course the merit of the Noshim Tzidkonios and the Galu Avasil Mitzvah. Okay? So, tonight, we start with a new identification. Okay? This time we're reading about someone who we read about last Shabbos, namely Kalev ben Yefuneh. Okay? Kalev ben Yefuneh. All right. In the Torah, he's always referred to as what? As Kalev ben Yefuneh, right? In other words, Kalev, the son of Yefuneh.
No, that's Joshua.
Joshua ben Nun. Okay? Kalev ben Yefuneh. Okay. All right. Listen, I don't want to cast any aspersions on the paternity. Okay. But we're going to see right now that there are certain passages that speak of Kalev and they don't use the name Yefuneh. Instead, they use other names. First of all, we do have mentioned in the Torah also that the Kalev is referred to as Haknizi. In other words, the one who came from Kenaz. Okay? A descendant of Kenaz. Okay? Haknizi. Then, tonight we're going to start with a passage in Divrei Hayomim, in other words, in the Book of Chronicles, which is, as you know, the last book in the Tanakh, in the Bible, right? And the first part of the Book of Chronicles deals with names, Yichus, this one, that one, so on and so forth. But at times, the names can be very, very confusing. And so we start with such a passage tonight in reference to Kalev. This is what we're going to see right now, okay? All right. The third line from the bottom, right? Yeah, mm-hmm. But actually we have to start with the fifth line again to review that. Okay?
Right.
I say I wasn't wrong when I said the fifth line and the third line, because the two of them are interrelated. All right. The fifth line from the bottom said, right, Mandoma Bote Malchus, right, that in accordance with the opinion of the sage who says that, the midwives eventually were the ancestors of royalty, right? Naturally, who is the royalty? So we said it was David, right? And not only that, but we said David, Nami Miriam Kosi. In other words, David can also be considered a descendant of Miriam, okay? Dirsiv, and what is the pasuk that they quote? They quote a pasuk from Divrei Hayamim, which says, what Thomas Azuva, right? That Azuva died. By Yikach lo Kalev es Ephros, right? Then Caleb took Ephros, Vatelet lo es Chur, and she bore unto him a son by the name of Chur, Uksiv, and then it's written, that David ben Ish Ephrosi, right? That David was the son of an Ephros, a descendant of Ephros, is the way we understand, the meaning of it now, okay? All right, so now, having quoted that, now they're going to quote another pasuk from Divrei Hayomim, and as we'll see in a moment, that there is a difficulty in the translation. Okay? Difficulty is based upon the use of the Hebrew verb under normal circumstances. It's written over there, the Cholev ben Chetzron. Take a look, first of all, right? It doesn't say Cholev ben Yefuneh, but it says Cholev ben Chetzron. Holid es Azuva Isha. Now, normally the word Holid in Hebrew implies that he is the man who is the father of the child. This is the meaning of the word, because if we refer to the woman, then we use the expression, Yolda, right? Or Vatelid, which would correspond to the same idea. In other words, she gave birth to so-and-so. So therefore it's written, that Holid or Vayolid, then normally it means he was the father. So if we take the pasuk according to the Pshat, which means the simple meaning, the way that we would expect it, then it would mean that Kalev, the son of Chetzron, right, gave birth to Azuva. a wife. Now, needless to say, this is very confusing. Okay? So therefore, right, it's a very difficult one. Okay. So what we have to do is to take a look, first of all, at Rashi, and hopefully Rashi will make it a little bit clearer for us. Okay. And if not, then I'll have to supplement Rashi with God's help. All right. I start from Vayikach lo kolei v'sefros. You see that? It's roughly about, seven, eight lines, right? Right. Okay. It says, Vayikach lo kolei v'sefros, right? That kolei took Ephros. So the question is, when did he marry? In other words, Vayikach over here means he married, okay? Those of you who have studied Kedushin, you know that this is one of the expressions which implies that he married, okay? So when did he marry her? So the achash and his rapes chozal kocheloi. All right. After she got cured, so he went and he married her. So Alma, if we see then that Ephros kore Miriam. See what Rashi says? That Ephros is another name for Miriam. Okay. What did Sylvia say last week? Mira le Ephros. Of course, it's a classic of the Yiddish theater. No. All right. At any rate, Uchsiv, and then it's written, B'David concerning David, what? Ben Ish Ephrosi, right? So, in other words, what is the implication? That if Ephros is Miriam, right, then David himself is a descendant, you know, of Kolev and of Miriam, okay? Alright, then take a look at the next passage in Rashi. The Kolev ben Chetzron, right? So he says, Pasuk hu b'divrei Yomim. First of all, he tells you, this is a Pasuk that comes from divrei Yomim. Alright, then he says, Ben Yifune. His name is Kolev ben Yifune. So therefore, we have to find a reason why he is called. This is based, of course, on the Gemara. All right, let's see what the Gemara says, then I'll get back to the Rashi, okay? And then I'll come back again to understanding how Rashi and the Chazal understand this pasuk, okay? As I said, it's a little complicated, okay? Mm-hmm. All right. The pasuk in Divrei HaYomim says, Bekolei ben Chetzron, right, three lines from the bottom, holiness Azuvo Isho, right? And as I said, we cannot take it here in the literal sense that he was the father of Azuba as a wife. Obviously, he's not going to marry his own daughter, number one, right? And so we have to say that holiness, Azuba, means that he became the father through Azuba, his wife, of whom? The Es Urios, all right? And also, he fathered children by Urios. Okay, because obviously the S means together with. So obviously, in other words, he married more than once. Okay, and so he married a woman called Azuba, another one called Yerus. The Eile Bonecho, and these are her children. What are they? Yeshar, the Shovav, the Ardon. Okay, those are their names. Yeshar, Shovav, and Ardon. So now the Gemara says, Ben Chetzron. How come it says the son of Chetzron over here in Divrei HaYomim? Ben Yifunehu, right? Should say he's the son of Yifuneh, as the Torah says. So therefore, why does it say Ben Yifuneh? The answer is because, again, we have to interpret what the name stands for, right? And what is Ben Yifuneh? This is Ben, he is the son, Shepano, who turned aside Me'atzas Beragim, right? From the bad advice, but bad counsel given by the spies. This is what we read about this past Shabbos, right? That he and Yehoshua were the minority opinion against the 10 spies, okay? All right. So, therefore, Ben Yifuneh, they relate to the word Pono. In other words, he turned aside from them and did not associate with the, the evil report brought back by the 10 spies. Right. Yeah. All right. So, now he says, Vakate, however, still, good evening, Rona, Ben Kenaz, who? He's also the son of Kenaz. Hi. Dichsiv, as the Pasuk says, Vayil kedo osniel ben knaz achi kolev. This is a pasuk in the early chapters of the book of Shoftim, where it says that Asniel ben Kenaz, famous character in the book of Judges, Shoftim, that's the name of the book, right? He captured it. Naturally, what did he capture? The answer is he captured the city of Hebron. Remember that, you know, we spoke about the importance. I mean, what was Kalev doing? So, of course, what Kalev was doing, he went to the Kivrei Ovis, you know, in order to get inspiration as to how he should act in giving his report back to Moses and to the people of Israel. Okay? So, Asniel ben Kenaz captured it. And who is Asniel ben Kenaz? He is Achi Kalev, right?
Yeah, his younger brother.
He was the brother of Kalev. So in other words, then who should be the father? You understand?
Yes.
Kenaz should be the father, right? Yes. So far we have three different names for Kalev's father.
It's very common nowadays.
You're right. Those days not so common. You're absolutely right. Yeah, today you have, you know, right. The children, they have... the father is different from the mother, and the mother is different. As I get this, you know, we're aware of that. Okay, but as I said, now we have three names: Kalev ben Yefune, right? The next one is that we call him the son of Chetzron, right? Mm-hmm. And now we refer to him as the son of Kenaz. All right, so Yefune, we already explained.
Why?
The death, right? Why? Because Shepono Beyatzos Meshoim. He turned aside from the evil counsel given by the wicked Meraglim, and as a result, you know, this is why he was called the son of Yefune. Alright. Now, how about his connection with Kenaz? What's the story over there? So, Omar Rava has the following explanation. He says, Chorgo de Kenaz Haba. He says that Kalev was not really the son of Kenaz, but he was instead the stepson of Kenaz. Choreg in Hebrew means a stepson. Or Choreg is, of course, would be stepdaughter, but frankly, if I would say, let's say, Eim Choregas, then it means a stepmother. Of Choreg, therefore, would be a stepfather. Okay. So, in other words, according to Rava, then he was actually a stepson of Kenaz. But because he was raised by Kenaz also, so that therefore, this is why he's referred to as the brother of Asniel, right? And the son of Kenaz. Okay, back to the Rashi. Okay, so he says, Ben Yefune, right? Ben Shenifla Me'atzas Meraglim. He's called Ben, you know, the son of Yefune because he turned aside from the wicked counsel of the spies. So he says, Teiritzehu, this is the explanation that Achazal give to commentators, where he explains the Olam ben Chetzron. The truth of the matter is, he's saying that Chetzron is the real name of Kalev's father, right? Veloma Nikra ben Yefune, so therefore, why does the Torah refer to him as being the son of Yefune? So the answer is, Al Shem Asa, because of his deeds, namely that he turned aside. Meyatzas Meraglim, right? Okay, and then the last comment of Rashi over there on the bottom of the page says Korgo de Kenaz. It says Ben Ishto Shel Kenaz Haya. He was the son of Kenaz's wife, right? Haya Kalev, right? V'nimso Osniel Ochimimo. And so, therefore, we find that Osniel was his brother through his mother, but not through the father. That's why the two different men's names given. Right, it's a second marriage, and so that's the reason why, in one case, he's referred to as Ben Yefune or Chetzron, as it says in Divrei Hayomim, and in the other case, that you know, they refer to Kenaz. Okay, and yes.
It was because he, you know, Panami Asat Meraglim.
Right.
Why didn't they call him then Yefune Ben Chetzron?
No, because his name is still Kalev.
Yeah, but I mean, you would think that, like, for example, when we talk about Yisro, had so many different names because of different characteristics.
Correct, correct, correct.
So
yes.
You would think that the person himself would have an alternate name rather than calling him the son of and changing the name of the father.
No, Leila. This is the way it's referred that way. In the case, you know, with Yisro, naturally, you're absolutely right. One time they call him Yeser, another one they call him Yisro, another one they call him Chovav, another time they call him Reuel, right? And so they go on and on and on, you know, and therefore each name is given a special characteristic. As for example, you know, that Yeser really was his name, but Yisro, because they added a parsha in the Torah in his honor and so on. Okay? And the same, why is he called Chovav? Because he loved the Rebbeinu Shel Olam, and he was Mizgayer, right?
Does Ben always mean the son of? Does Ben sometimes relate to what he has done, what he has accomplished?
Like
well, sometimes,
yes,
you're right.
Yeah,
yeah, sometimes. And sometimes, of course, it refers to a person who lives or is a member of a certain group or something. I mean, obviously, we use the expression like B'nei HaMishpacha, Ben Ho'ir. I mean, you have the Gemara in the Gila, for example. It's like B'nei Ho'ir, right? It means that the people who live in the city, they are the B'nei Ho'ir, right? All right, Gemara on the top of Yud Beis, it says Dikonami, which means look closely at the test and you'll see that what I'm saying is right. Okay, it's the word the dayek we use today in modern Hebrew. In other words, it's related to the idea, you know, the dayek, also like the idea of diknuk, which means not only grammar, but it means that you look very carefully at something. After all, if you speak in accordance with diknuk, it means that you're speaking correctly because you're thinking about what you should say in the language, right? Okay, so it says Daikaname Dichsiv. It doesn't say that his name, you know, the name of the father was Kanat, but it says Hakanizi. So, what does it say, Hakanizi? So, it means Shema Mino. So, from this, we learn, well, this is the conclusion, all right. But first of all, it says Hakanizi, all right. So, Rashi says on the top over there, Daikanami Dichsiv, Karach Rino, right? We have another pasuk, Kimishtoi the Kalev, which talks about Kalev. And it says over there, Lo Karye Ben Kanaz. He doesn't call him over there the son of Kanaz, right? Kedirsib Osniel, as we find written concerning Osniel. Ela Haknizi. He's called Yehoshua, he's called Kolib Haknizi, right? So therefore, what does Haknizi mean? He says, May Anshe Beis. So in other words, a member of Kanaz's family, right? Megidulov shall Kanaz, and raised by Kanaz, but doesn't mean necessarily that Kanaz was the father. All right, so now that we solved the paternity of Kolev, hopefully, so now we have to go to the Bible. Getting back to the bottom of the page over there, again, what does the pasuk say, three lines to the bottom? Hoilet is Azuva Isha, right?
Mm-hmm.
And two lines above that, Batomas Azuva Isha's Kolev, right? Doesn't say Eshes Kolev, that's in parenthesis, because in the text it didn't, but it's been added over here in order to show that we're referring to Azuba as the wife of Kolev, all right? So now, it says, Shema Minoah, top line over there, from this we can learn already that Azuba, Zumiriam. Azuba is another name for whom?
Miriam.
For Miriam, okay? And in other words, she was married to Kolev, okay? Do you get the idea of what they're trying to say? That Miriam is married to Kalev. All right. So now the Gemara asks an obvious question. The Lama Nikro Shmo Azuba. So if that's the case, why is she called Azuba and she's not called Miriam over here? So the answer is Shakol Azavuha Mitkilosa. Shakol Azavuha, because everybody, you know, literally like deserted her. Now what do you mean by deserted her? So for this we have to go back again to Rashi. I told you, Rashi, Kin and Hora.
Forsaken.
Huh?
Doesn't that mean forsaken?
Yes, absolutely. Azuba means the one who is forsaken, right. Yes. All right. So Azuba, says Rashi, right? Shahakol Azuba, right? This is the text, right? So now he explains. She mitchilo, he says Cholanis Hoyasa. Okay? First, she was ill. Of course, one explanation for the illness was the fact, if you remember, that she had suffered from leprosy at the time, okay? But anyway, you know, everybody said, she's a sick girl, right?
Go marry her.
Yeah, she's a sick girl. So, Kirikori law, Hocha Yurios. As afterwards we'll see, they also refer to her as Yurios. Ulakaban, and afterwards, Kori law Nami, Chela, La Azuba. Chela, all right, we'll come to that. That's a little further down on the page. So already they refer to her with different names, Yurios and Chela, right? Okay. I'll save the explanation until we get to the proper line. So just keep it in the back of the mind. Okay. Va'azuva. Why was she called Azuva? Very simple, says Rashi. Sha'azavuha kol bachura Yisrael melisaisa. That all the Yiddish bacharim, right? They didn't want to marry her. They were afraid they would be getting a bad bargain by marrying a sick girl. Okay? And then, that at the beginning, everybody didn't want to have anything to do. All the marriageable young men didn't want to have anything to do with her. All right. Now the third line in the text, it says, hold it. Getting back again to that pasuk that we had, the third line from the bottom on the previous page, right? Kali ben Chesun, holy. How can it say holy that he gave birth? Which, as I told you, is in other words, that he is the father, right, of Azuba. Isn't this exactly how, if we would translate word for word, this is the way we translate it? And of course, I had to give a kvetch before in order to give a different meaning to it, okay? So they say, hold it, how can you say he was the father? He was married to her. Who ever heard of a father marrying his daughter? At least it wasn't done among Jews. So, Abba Rabbi Yochanan, so Rabbi Yochanan said, Kol ha-noise isha l'shem shomayim, ma'ale alava kosev ki'il yulada. It says, if a man marries a woman for the sake of heaven, in other words, he's marrying her because he wants to fulfill the mitzvah of marrying her, right? The shem shomayim for the sake of heaven, then he had given birth to her. In other words, he gives her like a new start in life. Okay? So that's the reason why they use the word hold it. Okay? Rashi, the Miss of Desova, after all, he was married to her. Kedirsi, if it's written by Thomas Azuba, that Azuba died by Yikach Lo, and then afterwards he took another wife, right? So Almo Itse Havai, actually. We see from this that, she was his wife to begin with. Okay. So, all right. Now, then afterwards it says Yurios. So why is she referred to as Yurios? Yurios means literally curtains in Hebrew.
Curtain?
That's the literal meaning, right? Right, exactly. With the tabernacle you had Yurios, remember? Okay. So, why was she called that? She says, Shahoyu Poneho Domim Yurios. Right? Because he says that her face looked like curtains. In other words, as Rashi would say, let's take a look again. Okay? Alright. First of all, the Shem Shemaim, third line of the Rashi.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? So the Shem Shemaim, he married her for the sake of heaven. Kazon Zu, as for example in our case over here, Shehoyasach Chola, she was a sick woman, right? When it saw the Shem Shemaim, but he married her in order to fulfill the mitzvah, of helping her become a married woman, right? He did it for the sake of heaven. Now, Rashi continues, why did he marry her besides for the mitzvah? Because there's a greater idea involved in the mitzvah. He says, bodak bi ochtiha ba'acheha, more correctly. He looked at the yichus, he examined the yichus that she had. Who were her brothers? Aaron and Moshe, right? The Ra'ah Osam Tzadikim, and he saw that they were Tzadikim. Okay, so therefore he knew that if he would marry her, he was marrying a woman who has, the yichus of being the Tzidkanis. That's why he married her, right? And Rashi comes in with a statement that we find in the Gemara in Bavdasra, where it says, V'rov bonim domim It says that the majority of sons resemble the mother's brothers. Well, I don't know, statistically
Very common to this.
Yes. Obviously, I mean, there's going to be influence, you know, because uncles and aunts do play an important role in the life of children and growing up, there's no question. And particularly, of course, we have to remember, in those days, families lived together, and so therefore there was always much greater interaction between fathers and mothers and grandparents and uncles and aunts and cousins and so on.
It's not so long ago families lived together.
Right, right. Today, unfortunately, we have, you know, our children scattered to the four winds. And we're thrilled when we have those rare occasions that we can get together, you know. So naturally, I don't think that uncles and aunts play such an important role anymore the way they did. But certainly they did, but as long as families were so close, they didn't live together.
I have a question.
Yes.
Typically, with the phrase of Thomas is who?
Yeah.
Wicked law could have been invoked, but the title law is who?
Yes.
Miriam died at the end of the drive for the wilderness.
Right.
Who? Then this Moshe and Aaron and Moshe Aaron and Achur went up to the mountain.
Correct, correct.
What, at the same Achur?
Yeah. Well,
comes,
that's a good question. I understand, right. I mean, we've always identified the Achur
as the uncle of Achur.
Yeah. So, there's no question, I mean, you know, that he was related, you know, to Miriam, okay?
Yes. Miriam's
Pardon me? According, right.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. You know, he resisted the demand of the people to make the Egel Hasava, to make the golden calf. Yeah. Okay, as you can see, we're it can be a little bit.
I mean, this is a very interesting thing.
Yeah,
the
you have a chance sometime.
The first,
right. After that, every building gets to be, you know, a regular historical business, you know. But until that point, when they go these first chapters with the genealogy, you can go Meshuggah, you know. Yeah. Okay. Let's see. Yes. Okay. Leah Rios, right? So he says, you know, why Rios? Why does she look at first like Rios? He says, Beli Toar Admumis. He says, she did not have any redness in her complexion. In other words, she was too gloss. That's why she looked like a curtain, you see. Right. Why? Because she was sick, exactly. He says, the machmas chol yo, right? Oh, you say rak rekes. Because of her illness, she looked kind of greenish.
Like greens.
Yeah. Right. Okay.
Well, she
Then it's written.